Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Tribe of Two, the officially unofficial podcast for The Mandalorian on Disney Plus. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're back for our season three wrap-up. Aaron, I know that involves a lot of feedback. Hopefully we have a ton, because I know we haven't been doing too much of it during the season. How's it looking?
Yeah, we got a good wrap-up podcast. I started things last week by mentioning the one thing I hope to see next season is Mando with a new ship. But I was curious to see what everybody else wanted from our taciturn, laconic bounty hunter and his young charge. First up was Mel from Melbourne, Australia. She has one burning question. What is the laundry situation? We've only seen Mando and Grogu in the same clothes for years. Grogu's little sack outfit drags the dirt and the mud. We've seen him puke up bits of blue cookie plus whatever crumbs and goo that babies get on him. Jam hands. You know he's got jam hands. Mando himself must surely be a bit ripe, a strong, manly musk at best. He must get sweaty in all those flights wearing layers of clothing, presumably heavy armor. He's bathed fully in the fully clothed in the living waters, which might have cleaned him a bit, but then the clothes dried on him, which he carried on the adventure, and the inside of his helmet just must be horrific. I do not want to imagine a nightmarish smell in the little cockpit as they travel around the galaxy. Maybe now that they have a little house, Mando can attend to their personal hygiene. Curious about your thoughts on this very important question. Thanks for your coverage, and I love it.
Well, thank you, Mel.
You got any thoughts on the laundry situation in a galaxy far, far away?
All I can picture is Mando standing buck naked except for his helmet next to the washing machine waiting for his clothes to finish.
Yeah, does he wash his clothes in the helmet? You know, he just fills it for a little bit and
sure.
You know, gets it all saturated, pounds it on a rock like an old settler pioneer.
Okay, let me go far afield. Let me really tangent here. I have never understood why we as a civilization have felt the need and carried it out as best we could to replicate sounds and sights, but not smells. We have no mechanism in this world for replicating smells. Like saying, I'm going to record a smell that I smell, and I'm going to reproduce it for later consumption.
I think it's because like the hearing and sound are essentially our eyes and ears picking up, you know, waves, you know, whereas like taste and touch and smell involves something
thing.
Touching. Yeah, it's a molecule hitting your nerves in your nose. It's a molecule hitting your taste bud. We don't have a way to like just put that out on a wave.
But why not? Why can't we reproduce that accurately? Why can't we get a mechanism that we attach, like headphones, right? Like you stick headphones on your ears. What if you had nose phones, nostril phones?
Yeah, and it has like recharge, like printer cartridges of like complex organic compounds, and you
combine those in
esters,
different ways.
Esters, that's like the stuff that like you know carries
the essence of the smell. Like, why have we not invested any? You know what? It's because we don't convey information via smells.
Mm.
We have not developed a system of communication that involves smell, whereas we have with sight and sound, and so we find it more important. But goddammit, I want to know what Baby Yoda smells like.
It's powerful. Like we do communicate. Like if you smell the stench of rotting flesh, it like set, you know, like there's like it makes you uneasy. Like there are like very primitive things communicated through smell and taste.
They can be, but we as a society have not developed a system around that, right?
Can you imagine in a horror show when you walk into like, you know, when you slaughter and like it's always like, what do you hear when you open the door and there's like blood slick on the floors? It's always the buzzing of flies, right?
Mm-hmm.
You hear that, like, but imagine if the overwhelming stench as soon as that door swung open just filled the theater. I think your idea sucks now.
Well, you're going to the worst possible place. What if it was the smell of a rose, right? What if it was the sound of music and you're dancing through the fields and you want to smell the smell of the fresh air? Yeah, come on.
Finally, answer that question. Doesn't have to be rotting corpses. What Julie Andrews smells like?
There we go.
You know it's got to be good. You know it's got to be real good. It's got good and wholesome.
Mm-hmm.
So here's my take on this, because you always think in terms of like the future of like the technology, right? Transporter technology, replicators, sure, lightsabers, turbo lasers, faster than light travel. There's this one Star Wars novel that I can't remember the exact situation, but Data got stranded on a primitive world that had some kind of gods that to petition them, you had to run through some sort of labyrinth of survival where they would try to kill you. It's like this kind of killing game. And Data was with this primitive woman and she was guiding him through it. And it was largely told from her point of view, which was really interesting. Like this primitive woman regarding this person that she didn't know was an android yet. She will eventually understand, but like, the thing that really impressed her was his clothing. Like there's a scene where like, they find a river and Data cleans his uniform and it's like stained and burnt and like disheveled and wrinkly. And he just like takes his uniform tunic off and like rinses it through the water and kind of shakes it. And it instantly, like she just, all the dirt just sloughs off of it. And it comes out of the water looking new, and he kind of shakes it a couple times and it's bone dry. And he puts his Star Trek uniform on, and she just like, oh my God, if I had fabric like that, can you? And I thought, it's like, you know, you never think about like what 24th century fabrics might be able to be capable of, let alone 10,000 years of development like they have in Star Wars. Because like, think what we've done since we've invented like spandex, Lycra, and Gore-Tex, like how that's been a huge change. And like, so like, I wonder if like, I know it's kind of fun, but like, what if it just isn't a problem? Like, you
like
just,
the shirt he's wearing is basically like standing in a shower all day.
It's like, yeah, antimicrobial, because that's what most of the stink comes from. It's bacteria in your body breeding and creating odors. So like, what if it's all antimicrobial, or it's woven too thick for like dirt to like stick to it? It just like, you know, it just can't even penetrate the fibers. Like I always think that like, yeah, they're just next level textiles.
All right. I can see it.
Fred Hurley from New York says, as a Rebels fan, I think you're going to be pretty happy with how Thrawn is presented in the future. I also think you're going to like Ahsoka. The back half of Rebels is honestly some fantastic Star Wars. You're going to love Sabine Wren, not pushing you to watch Rebels. Good. Good. Because I was getting word there for a minute. I'm just trying to give you hope. A new hope, if you will. I see what you're doing there, Fred. I think Thrawn is the Thanos of the next phase of the Star Wars timeline. He's the big bad in Ahsoka. He'll be the baddie in Mando season 4, and he'll probably be the big bad in some movies. I think he'll get the treatment he deserves, since they need him to be a plausible threat for the whole phase. I think this is a good way to look at it, and it feels like the Star Wars universe has been clumsily stumbling around looking for that Infinity War endgame thing that they can do.
It was in front of them all along. Standing right there.
Yeah, all the shit that you tried to throw into the ash bin of Star Wars history and rebrand as legends. Turns out there's some good stuff in there.
It's like a Freddie Prinze Jr. movie where the nerd was what you were looking for all along, Freddie.
He says, as one of those cartoon watchers, I did like the Darksaber fate. It had served its purpose. It did unite the Mandalorians. Without it, those two groups aren't both on board, and they needed both to win. Seeing Bo-Katan's charge of the Darksaber out, the united Mandalorians behind her on the cusp of retaking Mandalore, was the culmination of a character arc that spanned parts of 11 seasons of television and 30 years of in-universe time. The Darksaber served its purpose, and now to forge a united future, they needed to move beyond it and all the baggage it brings. It was a great moment. Did people not like the ring going through the lava because it had been such an important symbol? yeah, that's a good way to put it. I'm glad, because like I said, I saw a lot of people that were pissed about it. And to me, you got the same experience, and it's like, it seems like it's the inevitable thing that should have happened, especially when Moff Gideon's taunting you about your reliance on trinkets, right?
Sure. Yeah, it's a thing to overcome, not a thing to hold on to.
And that Bo-Katan charge of the Darksaber, that's really fucking cool. Mm-hmm. Like she's there leading the charge with her backpack, her jetpack blazing, dozens of Mandalorians behind her doing the charge. It's exciting stuff. Yamil says, "Hey guys, I love the show. Well, thanks. I think Mando and Baby Yodes will absolutely be in Ahsoka series for at least 1.5 episodes, just like the Book of Boba." Uh-oh. "I also think season 4 will be Mando teaching Baby Yoda how to be a bounty hunter for the first 2, maybe 3 episodes. Then they'll get involved in a New Republic story arc with Tevis that will lead to the Filoni movie. I think it will also get a lot of scenes featuring Bo-Katan being a uniter on Mandalore, maybe even full episodes worth. The title of the show is The Mandalorian. That doesn't necessarily mean Din only. The last weird internet theory that I came across, okay, let's start with there. What do you think about them continuing to interleave the plots of these, like, so many cards in a deck?
So I've been encouraged by the things that I've heard about the goings-on behind the scenes around Boba Fett. From what I understand, the Double Fs were not happy with being forced by Disney to interleave these things in this way. And Disney has, I think, eaten a little bit of humble pie here with the Star Wars canon, with them doing the movies and those being ill-received and the series being poorly received for the most part. And I think them saying, okay, we're going to take a step back, stop producing so much content, is them acknowledging that they have been kind of messing up. So I'm hoping that the Double Fs will have a little more power to, because I, from what I heard, they were not happy about the
There's
way
actually
the
feedback
Boba
to that point that we'll be considering. Yeah.
Yeah. So if they get a little bit more say in the production of the storylines of the next several series, they might actually be able to correct that. So I'm actually hopeful that Disney has noted, okay, we have not done the best job on this. Maybe we should leave it to the people who were saying this is a bad idea.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't think the lesson is you can't have Baby Yoda and Mando in Ahsoka.
Sure.
Because certainly the Marvel recipe was not, oh, we can't ever have our characters playing together. It's right. Just you can't have a defining moment for those characters happen in someone else's show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you want to have an episode where Ahsoka gets with the Mando and Grogu and they do an adventure, fine. But you can't have Din Djarin teaching Baby Yoda to be a bounty hunter, and then he comes back Mando season 4 with a fucking helmet and a wrist launcher and a rock, you know, and a rocket pack. You can't do that. Mm-hmm. You got to have that shit in Mandalorian. Once Grogu becomes a bounty hunter, then if you want to peel them off and have him do hunt a bounty over in Ahsoka or wherever, fine. But you just can't have the defining arc of a character happen in someone else's show. And that's the thing where they get in trouble. Because if it's just some rando adventure that adds a little color to Ahsoka's storyline, no one's going to give a shit about missing it if they do.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if they come back and feel like, what the fuck happened? You know, last I knew, he was getting kidnapped by Moff Gideon. What the hell's going on? That's the shit that can't happen.
Yeah, and they know this. That's the weirdest thing about it, right? They know that. They've done it right in the Marvel franchise forever. Why can't they do it right here?
But I don't know that it was intentional. I wonder if it was something they just kind of lucked into, because that's kind of apes. You know, is that something like Jack Kirby and Stan Lee figured out in the 60s that, like, hey, you know, Maybe. You can have Spider-Man with the Fantastic Four. You just can't have Rex Reed getting married to an invisible woman in Spider-Man. You just can't do it.
Uh-huh.
You got to have that in the Fantastic Four. That's my Stan Lee or Jack Kirby. Not sure.
It's just one of the baseline things they brought into it, and it was never really spoken about.
All the Marvel comic plot lines kind of go that way. Even the big crossovers, like, you know, they have it, you know, and that's the other thing, Marvel. Sometimes they would have just crossover issues that weren't like X-Men and they weren't Spider. It was just like the Secret Wars or whatever. And that's kind of so, like, then you have a book that everybody, all the fans of various bring in. It's smart because it gets people by you're a big fan of the X-Men. You want to see what's going on with the Secret War, but then you get introduced to Spider-Man and Thor and Iron Man and all these other guys. And you're like, oh, I kind of like Iron Man. I might start reading Iron Man's monthly. It's a good way to cross pollinate. But if you just, you know, Iron Man invents a new fucking armor and Mighty Thor, and he comes back with us, and the Iron Man fans like, what the fuck? I missed this bit. That's how you piss people off. So they might have just got that baked in for free on Marvel, and they had to learn it in Star Wars. But
see,
I don't
that's
know.
The only theory that makes any real sense to me there. Because
I don't know.
Yeah, why not? Especially when you have people arguing for it, you know? We have to rid this planet of enemy sorcerers. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Apes hunt humans.
That is wrong.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
The Beskar belongs to the Mandalorians. This podcast belongs to you. Here's more Tribe of Two.
What else? About the thing about the Mandalorian, it doesn't necessarily mean... I think that's true, but like, I also don't think it can mean Mandalorians generically. I think that the way I... And this is just a personal opinion. This isn't a right or wrong way. But in my mind, when the Mandalorian is over, and I think about it, the sweep of the seasons, I want to think like, oh, that's the Mandalorian, and it doesn't have to be it doesn't have to be Din Djarin. It could be probably Grogu. It could be Bo-Katan. But someone has to be the man, because it's not the Mandalorians. It's not Mandalore. It's not it's the Mandalorian. So I do think they should have an idea of who's this story is really about. And I think it's Baby Yoda.
Yeah, it's possible. We'll see.
One last weird internet theory that I came across, getting back to email. Moff Gideon had a mustache in seasons 1 and 2, but not this season. We also observed his clones didn't have mustaches. People are assuming the Moff in this season was a clone. In the words of my coworker, fuck that. I hated that guy. Don't want him back. Any thoughts on Moff mustache gate?
So is this all just to say like the real Gideon is still out there? Like you didn't actually kill him? Okay.
And here's my thing is like, I thought the second they show a room full of identical copies of this dude and then him being dead 5 minutes later, I'm like, oh, well, that's potentially a clone. This mustache shit is making me think that it's like, not only are they keeping a possibility open, but they're intending like this smacks of like, oh, we're actually. Oh, the other idea is like, you know, Giancarlo Esposito just shaved.
Sure. But yeah,
they've been giving people fake mustaches in Hollywood ever since they started collecting photons on film. So.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want this to become like the perennial thing where Moff Gideon looks like he's captured, looks like he's dead, and he keeps coming back, especially when you have Thrawn in the mix. Like, I don't... That's if you're going to throw Thrawn in, what do you need Gideon for, really?
Yeah, Gideon's like a lesser... So, yeah, that's the one thing that's going against the Moff Gideon theory.
Unless Thrawn is, you know, the bad guy in the Ahsoka series and the future series, but Gideon is like the main bad guy in Mandalorian.
Well, but imagine if they keep this Grogu thing going and we go through like Grogu goes through an arc like Groot does in the Guardians of the Galaxy, where he starts off as a little baby and then he becomes a toddler and then he becomes a little kid and then he turns into a surly teenager and he has his own little arc over the next couple years, right? Like, it would be kind of sick to bring Moff Gideon back when you get adult Grogu. Like, young adult Grogu, his final hurdle is the guy that started all this so long ago and has tormented him so much and has tried And it's kind of an interesting symmetry because Gideon's whole purpose is to bring the best of all the things that he sees as a threat to the Empire. Yeah, he wants the Jedi's force. He wants the Mandalorian's armor. He wants the clone technology. So, and Grogu might be all those three things.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd make a lot of thematic sense to like, yeah, Thrawn is the galactic threat, but Moff Gideon is Grogu's final boss.
I like that. And it, I will say it also felt pretty anticlimactic to say, haha, I am the new evolution of the Dark Trooper. And then just kind of like incidentally do away with that, right? Like,
yeah,
that wasn't the point of the scene. That scene, it wasn't like, aha, we defeated the Dark Troopers forever and they'll never be back. It was like, well, a potential clone of Gideon died. So,
yeah,
it would be pretty disappointing for that to be all the Dark Troopers amounted to.
Well, especially since Flash clones are like a thing that is in the Star Wars legends now. Like that, I remember there was one particular Death Star designer that one of the books delved into that Palpatine loved torturing this guy to death.
Jeez.
Like he would torture him to death with the Force, and then his he would die, and then he would be automatically like a cloning tank would open, and his naked body would spill onto the floor right beside his smoking corpse. And the Emperor is like, "Next time, do better." And like, I kind of like the idea of like, yeah, like if the Dark Troopers are these clones that like you if you kill one of them, it's like the Guardians and Destiny. It's like, well, you just made them that harder to kill the next time because that's a wrinkle they got on their ass, and they'll, you know, it's like they'll just get better and better as warriors because even death can't kill them. That's a cool idea. That's a cool idea. Okay, let's delve into some of this rumors behind the scenes. Book of Boba, Mando, the double Fs, Raging Against the Mouse. Christine says, if the rumors are to be believed, Favreau was livid about having the Mando and Grogu reunion happening in Book of Boba Fett. It was Kathleen Kennedy and the executives at Disney that insisted on it, so they were able to capitalize on Grogu being there with Mando in season 3. He's also forced to do things like add the Hot Rod Vespas because sales want to make action figures. It sounds like there's a lot of tension during this time between Favreau and Kathleen Kennedy to the point where he allegedly said, fuck it, let them do whatever they want for Book of Boba. I'm hoping that Disney felt the backlash for Book of Boba and we won't have to do these sorts of clashes affecting future Star Wars endeavors and storylines. Man, so like whenever I hear this kind of internet stuff, I think two things. Number one, I've spent a long time championing the causes of women and cheering on my sisters as they find success in television and film and computer science and STEM and just generally whatever the fuck they want to do as complete human beings. I think it's great. I think it's wonderful. And I hope because of that history, it won't come across as horribly misogynistic to say fuck Kathleen Kennedy because she seems like she's uniquely bad at her job. She hates Star Wars. And just as a woman can do as many great things as a guy, they can fuck up just as big as any man. And I think she's fucked up. And I can't believe she still has her job.
Yeah.
I can't fucking believe she still has her job.
And I don't think that Kathleen Kennedy is the woman who needs your support and your champion.
True.
Right now.
And also, to keep it fair and balanced, George Lucas did a perfectly great job of fucking up Star Wars before some fucking woman ever got her hands on it. So, but the internet does not have a long history of championing women's causes. I always get a little suspicious when I hear these just so stories of like the fanboy's favorite creator dueling with the evil witch who's taken over our Star Wars whoopee and she's running to the ground and he's raging. No, you can't do this. Cause like, honestly, the Technicolor Vespa shit sounds like Robert Rodriguez. That this is his Spy Kids coming out.
Sure.
That shit's Spy Kids. That doesn't feel like Kathleen Kennedy. That feels like Robert Rodriguez thinking, oh, I'm making kids entertainment. Let's make it bright and shiny and bubbly.
No regard for the universe he's in. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I don't know what to make of this other than I do think turn it over to double Fs is the way to go. And you let the producers be producers and executives execute. But like, if Star Wars is still in the doldrums 2 or 3 years from now, if I was the mouse, I'd clean fucking house.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, let the people who are succeeding succeed and the people who fail, just swap them out. Yeah. Find people who are more in tune with what people want out of Star Wars.
Yeah. So I'll say to, like, it's setting aside of personalities. And if you're a theory before that, like, Marvel got this right accidentally because that's the way they always wrote their stories, because they intuitively or deliberately had that shit figured out and Star Wars just fucking blundered, then, like, they have had enough on the job learning that this shit should not be happening anymore. And if it does, heads should roll, because this is billions of dollars we're talking about, you know? Like, if we don't care about money in this country, what the hell have we come to, you know? That's the one bedrock lost, thing that underpins everything. If you stop caring about money, what the hell will we do? So stop shitting the money bed.
I know this is all rumor, and it may or may not be true, but it does bring me some encouragement, or at least enough plausibility that they have seen the errors of their ways, and maybe it's going to get better in the future, that I'll continue to hold out a little bit of hope. I've got an old hope, if you will.
Yes, yes. Star Wars isn't beyond hope. I think Andor proves that. I think general success and love that Mando is, but like, also they are flirting with Star Wars losing cultural cachet, you know, like if they keep fucking up for another couple of years, and I just see more and more fans, they're just going to find other things to get into, you know?
Yeah. You're going to burn people out with mediocre to bad content. Like, right. if you produce a ton of amazing content, people love it and people are getting energized by it. But if you're producing mediocre or bad stuff at this quantity, you're just going to burn people out.
And there's so many things competing for people's nostalgic member berries. Like, their Star Trek is getting ginned up again. HBO just bought all of the Harry Potter franchise to, like, make it to, like...
They're going to have Lord of the Rings everywhere. Like,
there's that. You're going to have a lot of people competing for nostalgia for the millennials and Zoomers. Mm-hmm. So Star Wars cannot afford to fuck around for a decade, which they've largely done. Christine also says, sorry, but I have to push back a bit on your Kenobi hate. I had so many feels watching the show. I'm not someone who automatically loves all things Star Wars. I did not like the Book of Boba or the sequel trilogy, and I hated the prequels. But if you can't love on a child princess Leia helping Obi-Wan connect with the Force after living in isolation and exile on Tatooine for 10 years, so the whole thing in the New Hope when she reaches out for his help makes more sense, and you don't want to see an epic battle between Vader and Obi-Wan, then you don't have a Star Wars soul. Newsflash, Christine, I don't have a Star Wars soul. That died and left my body sometime halfway through the runtime of... The Rise of Skywalker, and I've been a soulless husk ever since.
Mine left on the fourth watch of Phantom Menace. Fourth in theater watch on Phantom Menace. Yeah, and I saw it three more times after that.
Stop the cap. You loved The Force Awakens. And
that tried to rekindle my Star Wars soul.
Right. They could have done it.
Shit the bed.
You could have been a giant Star Wars nerd again.
Yeah.
And they fucked it up. So, and you know, it's wild though, because I looked up on Rotten Tomato because I was about to stop the cap on Christine here, but the cap cannot be stopped because the thermometer reading for Kenobi. What do you think it is for the critics?
62%.
82%
for critics. Holy shit!
The audience score is 63%. That's fucked up, right?
Oh.
Why the hell would the audience rebel against Kenobi? So, I mean, there's, like I said, the 82% is a lot high, because I was thinking it'd be in the 40s, 50s, maybe. And but like, yeah, that's a wild thermometer rating. Now, you do get a little, as Star Wars kind of gets shittier and shittier and nichier and nichier, like, part of this is like, I wonder how many big critics actually reviewed it. So you could have the critics that are still... You know, writing things for the sci-fi zines are a little bit more I wonder if they have those kind of pockets, or if they have a way to account for, like, well, most of the big people are no longer covering this because it's shit. So the people that do are...
That's the thing. Do you cover season 11 of The Walking Dead if you've seen the 10 previous seasons? You've probably given up and stopped covering it because it's garbage. Right. So,
and if you say it's good, like we said, so season 10 of The Walking Dead's good again. It's good in relation to what came before. It's almost like, you know, it's just a curve you're grading on. So I don't have a Star Wars soul, Christine. It died. Kathleen Kennedy killed it. Let's move on to Andrew in Texas. As a 48-year-old guy, I'm a lukewarm Star Wars fan. I love the originals, think the latest trilogy is garbage, and won't watch cartoons. The Mandalorian's pretty good, and I think this latest season was all right. Jim, right here, Andrew, our white-hot, glowing core of the Tribe of Two podcast. This is our this is our people. This is the demographic we're trying to chase. Yeah. Thank you for finding us, Andrew. The only thing I wanted to see in the season finale that I didn't get was for the Mandalorians to remove their helmets and do a nice soak together in the waters of Mandalore. Isn't that the point of the dumb helmet rule? Don't remove helmets unless you do the sacred soak. They're all there at the hot tub together. Come on!
Oh my god, that's the loophole, right? Like, you can just get in the waters and go full naked. You don't have to, wear your codpiece, your helmet, nothing. Skinny dipping in the Mandalore, the waters of Mandalore, man.
Yeah, the mythosaur poop hole loophole, because it's just the waters of Mandalore are half water, half mythosaur piss and shit at this point. Every once in a while, I used to be a Christian, and every once in a while, some of his younger people would try to bedevil the elders with here's the end round around the old man. And they'd always hit you up with Galatians 6:7. God is not to be mocked, for whatever a man sows, this you shall also reap. The idea of imagine if you were you're a Catholic and you believed in the power of a priest's blessing and holy water. And you want to set up a situation where you could have all the premarital and adulterous sex you wanted, as long as a priest is steadily chanting Hail Marys and dripping holy water on you the whole time. You're sinless, right? I think Galatians 6:7 would say that no, God would see that as the obvious end around, and he would not be pleased. I think the Mandalorian's got to be the same way, right? If I'm going to take the suggestion seriously.
What if you could fool the other Mandalorians into thinking you're just very absent-minded, and you remove your helmet accidentally at times? Like, I'm removing the rest of my clothes, why wouldn't I remove my helmet to get in the waters?
It just depends. It's like if you had a significant other or roommate that every once in a while forgot to flush the toilet, and let's say that's a real big thing for you, that every time you get mythosaur toilet,
by the way, don't forget
it attracts
flush.
Them they're attracted to the right piss shit ratio to water, and then they'll just move in, set up shop. but imagine that just really sets you off, and you're like, look honey, sweetie, you gotta start flushing the toilet. I don't care how you do, you gotta start flushing the toilet. And they just kept on, at some point you're like, are you really absent-minded, or you just not give a shit about me? If you love me enough,
they say, I give a shit, see, and they point to the toilet.
I'm leaving evidence behind all the time, babe. I give so many shits for you. That's where I'm going. At some point, I think the armor would come in and it'd be like, yo, this ain't the way. You can't be looking at each other's faces.
But you can get away with this once a year pretty easily.
Clearly, if it's something that you atone, because that's the other thing, atoning, didn't she say you have to atone? It was that was the phrase she used.
Maybe, but I thought that was all just wrapped up in bathing.
Redeem himself, maybe, because there's also got to be some contrition on your part, and a true contrition, a true being sorry for something, is a sincere attempt not to do it again. And if you're all just chilling in a hot tub looking at each other's naked faces, that doesn't seem like you're very sorry about it. So I don't think we have the mythosaur poop hole loophole that we could use, but I don't know. I'm not an armorer. I do not know the exact way. So says, lastly, although I believe Giancarlo Esposito is an extraordinarily talented actor and crushes in Breaking Bad and The Boys, he is neither scary nor menacing in The Mandalorian. When he dons the black armor, he doesn't remind me of terrifying Darth Vader. He reminds me more of Michael Dukakis in a tank helmet vibes. You're probably too young for this. Remember the ill-fated presidential run of one Mike Dukakis?
No.
He did a publicity shot because, I guess his campaign was trying to get him to, because he had just stepped on it so many times And he was like seen as this kind of like goofy dude. And they tried to get him in to do this like really macho.
This is like Putin riding a horse with no shirt.
Well, except for Putin looked kind of like a badass in this. This is Michael Dukakis. I'm sending it to you.
Oh, boy.
Through,
all right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And he's got his name on his helmet in the what's clearly
the
a slap-on label.
It looks like Mr. Bean. It looks like Mr. Bean having a misadventure.
He is pointing a very high-caliber gun.
Let me tell you how hard it is to not look badass when you're behind a 50-caliber machine gun mount of an M1 Abrams, and Mike Dukakis is managing to do that. He manages to look like a fucking Mr.
Also,
Bean.
Is he an HVAC repairman? What is with this name tag on his shirt?
Oh my god, yeah, he's probably wearing a motor pool overall.
Okay,
outfit.
Yeah. So he's working on the tank.
Yeah.
He's fixing that tank.
It's just ridiculous. And I get your point, because like I do think Giancarlo Esposito is very scary and intimidating, but something about him in The Mandalorian is goofy.
Well, he's hamming it up, right? I mean, he's playing a cartoon character essentially. Yeah, there's something pulpy, something very, I don't know, cheesy about it.
Yeah.
About most of this show, really, but he maybe identifies or embodies it most. I don't know.
Yeah. All young folks, do you want to see Mike Dukakis in a tank? You literally just have to search for Mike Dukakis tank, and it's like the first result. And there's a whole arc to our political history and how we got to things, and it's dumb, but like this was a scandal. A dude saying after he had lost a primary into the microphone, yeah, that killed someone's right. presidential run. I just can't figure this country out. Zach says, I agree with you guys that mouse droids are a lot of fun and added some welcome Saturday morning cartoon style levity to the finale in classic original trilogy style. However, when the first mouse droid discovered R5 and ran off to gather reinforcements, I got genuinely worried for R5. As the most innocent character on the show, I really didn't want to see anything bad happen to them, and I was sure that they were building up to the mouse droid returning with a trooper to dismantle R5, which would mean Mando would lose control of the blast shields and have to improvise how he finished off the troopers he was fighting. In my head, I'm already making peace with losing R5, but justifying that by reminding myself that at least it will be paid off with the even cooler climax to a fight. I felt safe to assume that because the show has made it clear that despite what it tells us about droids, it doesn't view them as sentient characters. True. Mm-hmm. But my shock and surprise, it doesn't return with an authority of any kind to actually deal with R5. It just gets more mouse droids.
Goes, grabs really its buddies. Look at this shit. You seen an R5 unit in a while? Look at this thing.
I was thinking that this model of droid, mouse droid with the police lights and everything should be K4REN.
K4REN.
Yeah, write it out. Write it out. Think it over your head. Think it over in your head. See if it comes to you.
Oh, K4REN. All right, four. Yeah. Nice.
If you're Moff Gideon or one of the Imperial contractors hired to design this base, why are you stocking with mouse droids? I always thought they'd function like mobile security system sensors. They find something wrong, it sets off the alarms. Now we've seen how they respond to threats. It seems that they have no weapons. They seemingly aren't connected to the rest of the network via comms. And when they find an issue, they just go and get more equally unequipped copies of themselves. One of them even drives itself right off the edge of the platform and R5 jets off. It was not knocked off. It wasn't even trying to chase R5 and just forgot it can't fly. It just rolls itself right off the edge in the other direction from R5. Clearly, these are not sophisticated machines, even by Star Wars droid standards. Whoa, there's so much tech that far outshines mouse droids in the universe. Why have mouse droids not been weeded out, upgraded, or replaced?
All right, I've got a theory.
Okay.
Mouse droids are the Star Trek or Star Wars version of Star Trek's Tribbles. They're self-replicating, and whatever the Empire does to try and rid their stations of mouse droids, they can't quite get rid of them all. They're an invasive species aboard.
Self-replicating.
Yeah, they build their.
That would actually.
They don't have weapons. They have tools though to build each other.
That would actually be a pretty funny theory that they're literally mouse droids. They just infest. Mm-hmm. They just infest facilities, and they build the most simple form of replicating themselves.
Yeah. They're hiding the walls. I mean, that's canon, right? They go into the walls.
True.
Yeah.
I always thought them as some kind of like basic utility thing, that they are just running messages back and forth, or they're, you know, interdepartmental mail droids.
They don't have wireless communications, at least not to the security systems.
Right. I mean, that's the thing, is like, you got to kind of close your eyes and remember that this is all 70s shit. So like, they did not foresee the internet and how widely connected and Wi-Fi everything would be, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even Star Trek is still somewhat caught in like this 60s era technology, where like their biggest technological innovation in the end of season three of Picard, and this is not really a big spoiler, is like all their starships can talk and network together for the first time. The year 2402 of our Lord is when Starfleet's ships started keeping track of each other, you know? So like, that's the real universe. I actually like your self-replicate. They're just vermin.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're not built. They just, it's like, oh fuck. We got to, who let the fucking mouse droids? We built this goddamn Death Star from scratch. who tracked in the mouse droids? They're everywhere now.
Who docked with the wrong Star Destroyer?
Right.
You know, you ordered a pallet full of this and you didn't check it for mouse droids. Jesus, man. Now we've got like mouse droids.
When you're looking at nice apartments in Coruscant, it's like, you know, it's like, oh, wow, this place. Since we moved here, honey, I haven't even seen a mouse droid. You know, it's like, that's like a stat. Yeah, I like that. I like that.
They
a lot.
Stay at an Airbnb. Suddenly they come back and there's a mouse droid in their suitcase.
Oh,
gets
God
out,
damn
goes
it.
In the wall. Yep.
Ah, oh, Jesus, we're going to have to fumigate the house with sulfuric acid for 24 hours to get them all. Got to get their eggs.
Yeah.
You got to get their nanite eggs. If you leave just one nanite left behind. Craig T says, I feel Star Wars as it is now is a multifaceted franchise in the way of TV and film. And I think it's a good thing. It's just taking some adjusting from both the creators and viewers alike. It used to be a film or TV series had a tone and a fan base it aimed for and stuck to it. But now a franchise like Star Wars is a unique position where it can reach different groups of different shows. You have the films for the masses and or for older viewers looking for deeper story. Mandalorian for younger and broader fan base that wants a light, fun show. Kenobi for those that grew up in the sequels or with the prequels, etc. The reason some shows get negative comments is they are looking for the wrong things in the wrong places and are annoyed when it doesn't do what they want. The Mandalorian is never going to be as deep as Andor. It's fun, light entertainment, and I think it nails it. Jim's comments about the first couple of seasons having throwaway episodes is valid, but it did serve to set up the situation, introduce the characters, and the world he moves in and paid off in season three. Think of it like a book. It's broken down in chapters, after all.
Okay.
I think this is what the mouse is trying to do, but I think it's facing some challenges.
Yeah, when it wants to interleave stuff so tightly. Because the vibe I get from them is that they want everybody to watch everything.
Yeah.
I don't get the vibe that they're okay with me not watching Book of Boba Fett, for instance. Or Ahsoka or Obi-Wan. Andor might be the exception to that. That's the one thing that hasn't felt like super connected to the rest of the stuff, but I don't know, man. I think you're right. They want their cake, but they also want to eat it.
They have to have some way to identify the various markets and segregate them more, because what they can't do is have like, oh, imagine if there's a universe where it's like, oh, you like The Wire, do you? Well, The Wire's story is partially going to happen Saturday mornings with the Smurfs. You know, Gargamel's going to come at Omar. Oh, what's going to happen? And then catch what Papa Smurf does on Days of Our Lives. Like, what the fuck? Like, yeah, that's, I understand wanting to capture every fucking demographic, but you cannot force the other demographics to enjoy shit that they don't want to enjoy with the thin hope of like, well, if you're going to have to do if you want to see if baby Grogu got back with his dad. Like, that's they can't do. That's what they have to figure out. You know, they want to cross. Like I said, I think we covered this in the previous discussion.
I think the
reason
the Marvel stuff works so well is because it's all the same tone. Like,
it is. It's all family.
There is no difference between a Captain America movie, an Avengers movie, an Iron Man movie, other than the characters and the plot. The tone is identical.
But Marvel, now that it's starting to, and DC's already going through this too, where it's like, now that they're acquiring things like, you know, Logan, and they're doing a new Deadpool, they, like, those are a different tone, or at least a different sensibility. And a lot of what they're doing on the DC side with, like, the ultra-violent, very mature, raunchy stuff is like, and but that's the thing. It's like, you know, it would blow me away if they made a Peacemaker Saturday morning cartoon.
Sure, you know? Yeah.
Like, once you make it an MA HBO series, you can't fucking make it into a family-friendly cartoon. Like, I know they... I mean, I grew up in an era where they actually did make rated R movies like Rambo and RoboCop and then turned them into cartoons. It was insane. yeah. So anyway, that's my thoughts on it. This is the ad break. We will return. I have spoken.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
We try to make it super easy to support Making Podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping. This podcast is in your care. Welcome back to Tribe of Two. Hannah, my ideal season of four of The Mandalorian would be Mando and Grogu going on episodic adventures Star Trek style. It would give us a fun 30 minutes a week of watching our father-son explore different parts of the galaxy, meet different species, grow in their new relationship. Bonus, the writers won't have to disappoint us with their lack of addressing the heavier topics like droid sentience. I'm curious if that would be a show you two would still enjoy.
I mean, it happened a lot earlier on in the show, right?
Yeah, I think Star Wars procedural is a good idea for the Mando, but you do have to, there has to be one bit of continuity, which is what you nailed here, the relationship between Grogu and Jaren.
Mm-hmm.
That, and I think Star Trek did that very well, too. Like, The Next Generation, very episodic, but, like, you know, Picard gets abducted by the Borg, and that has repercussions. Worf has a son that has repercussions. Like, once a season, there would be a little bit of character development, and they would kind of remember that. It wasn't super important to enjoy every episode, but it made it deeper when you did watch them all and got all that stuff. And I think that's what they need, and maybe even more so. Like, because I think television as a medium has changed, and we can't just go back to purely episodic stuff. We do crave the continuity, but...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fun 30-minute adventures where they are getting something interesting about the parent child relationship, and how you raise a kid and with the values that you have, but maybe try to be a little bit better. I think that would be cool. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mike says, in the first episode of The Mandalorian, Mando's mission is to bring Grogu back alive if possible, and IG-11's mission is to terminate Grogu. I always thought this meant that IG-11 was sent by someone other than Moff Gideon. They never really came back to this, so maybe I should let it go, but my hope is that Season 4 might address some of these other forces out there that might be interested in Grogu. Maybe the New Republic sent IG-11 to terminate him and keep him from being found by Moff Gideon. It's wild speculation, but it would make for a fun plot twist, and I haven't really been impressed with the ethics or incompetence of the New Republic thus far. This is a solid point. Moff Gideon could not have sent IG-11, because the last thing he would want is for Grogu to die.
Yeah.
So who else did? Would be in a position to know about,
right,
and terminate Grogu? It has to be the New Republic, right?
Luke Skywalker.
That was my next thought. That, like, Luke knew that there was this one Jedi youngling that was abducted from the temple and went missing.
Wouldn't kill him though, right? He wouldn't hire a droid to assassinate a potential Jedi.
You know who would though? Leia Organa Solo.
Oh.
She, like, Luke knows about her. He tells her and she's like, well, I wish Luke luck with his Jedi order and his temple and his training, and we need a new generation Jedi. But also, boy, I don't like the idea of a dark Sith Yoda being trained by an evil Moth. We need to put out a kill team and get that guy's ass.
All right. All right.
I could totally see Leia has that pragmatic ruthlessness that I don't think Luke does. I think that would be super fucking interesting in the universe.
Yeah, boy. Would they put that on Leia? Because I agree. I think that's kind of just barely within her character. But that's pretty dark. For
it makes a lot
hero
of, sense,
of the universe.
If you know that Master Yoda was cloned, and then, or I don't know if he's exactly cloned or if he's the father, like, but someone of Yoda's potential has been abducted and for potentially a decade or more been twisted and formed in some evil shape by, like, the remnants of the Empire, there might be no redeem. I mean, like, look what happened the last time a Sith Lord got loose and took over the galaxy. Like, that would be a very pragmatic, cold, but pragmatic decision.
Yeah. I don't know. That seems like you need the spinoff, the Leia spinoff.
Yeah.
You can delve into that.
You have to recast a young Carrie Fisher, which good luck with that. I do hope they stop with the... It's one thing to do it for characters, their actors are still alive, but, like, I think it's kind of ghoulish to do it with people who are dead. I they just need to recast people. There's actors. They do this. They've done it for... You seen Gary Oldman? He turned himself into Winston Churchill.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I think it's not cool to do it too soon after their death. I mean, it's a too soon thing for me. Like, would I object to them bringing back, I don't know, Paul Newman at this point? Probably not, if his estate gave them permission to do it.
For, like, a cameo, maybe? But, like, if you're going to do...
For a whole series as a main character, I am...
Like the J.J. Abrams Star Trek reboot. We just talked about this on lunch. Like, would that have been better if they just digitally de-aged Bill Shatner and got the digital corpse of DeForest Kelly? And, like, or did it, was it fun seeing these slightly different takes, but recognizable, and the actors trying to play homage, but make it? I think that's just inherently more interesting than Uncanny Valley Luke and Leia.
Yeah.
As fun as that's been here and there, I don't want that to be the go-to that can tell continuing stories in the Star Wars universe. Mary says, you guys asked about people's hopes and expectations for Season 4 of The Mandalorian. Indeed. After the Season 3 finale, I'm more confused than ever about what the Mandalorian way truly is and what the hell Mando and Grogu are going to do next season. On the one hand, Mando and the company save foundlings, speak of honor and tradition, and, as you've been discussing in recent episodes, spout a whole lot of self-important quasi-religious rules around following the way. On the other hand, Mando is a bounty hunter, and going into Season 4, not only is he not among his tribe, he's doubled down on the work-for-hire with a child in tow. I just don't see how these things are compatible. No offense to any bounty hunters who might be listening. Dog, cover your ears. But the morally gray nature of the work is the is in the job title bounty. It's a work for cash, finding and possibly killing anyone you get paid to. I don't understand how Mando can be both a devout follower and a bounty hunter, even if he's got a heart of gold. I know that a lot of these Star Wars TV characters pre-existed in the wider universe, but it feels to me like Favreau and company made Mando a bounty hunter just because Boba Fett was one, before squaring up his vocation with the people in Creed he follows. Can you please explain to me how this whole reborn bounty hunter business fits in with the Mandalorian way?
I mean, they're a warrior culture, right?
Yes.
It's like, I don't know, being devoted to something doesn't necessarily mean that you're peaceful, doesn't mean that you're unwilling to do bad things. I mean, plenty of people are devoted to evil things.
Think about Viking culture. You know, they would spend 3/4 of the year sowing crops and loving their children and weaving textiles and farming and domesticating animals. And then reaving season came and they get on their longboats and they'd go fucking kick in the port of some poor European town, sack it and make off with the riches. And if you look at their literature, there wasn't any hint of like, oh God, we're doing this evil thing that we always do. It was just literally a way of life for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, especially at the bounty hunters of Star Wars seem like, and I know they are hired by the Empire, but it seems like they do have, it's not that they're going and trying to find someone's husband or wife that ran from an abusive relationship, or they're hunting down some persecuted religious minority. They're trying to bring someone who has broken the law and hurt people to justice one way or the other. You know,
yeah, they're not mercenaries. I mean, there's a fine distinction here, but they're not mercenaries. They're bounty hunters.
Nor are they ruthless murderers. They are they're a paralegal institution, just like they are so nowadays. And they mm-hmm. have a guild that's licensed and has rules and restrictions and accountability. So I just think it's like we're looking at it from 21st century and like, oh, my God, you're
right.
You're a manhunter. Mm-hmm. And they are looking at it like, well, but some men we can hunt. They're mm-hmm. legally sanctioned. And maybe that's part of the Mandalorian way that they've lost is like, it's one thing to be a bounty hunter in the Old Republic where things were kind of on the up and up and you had a functional state and maybe things weren't as corrupt. But it's another thing to be a bounty hunter during the days of the Galactic Empire. Sure. Probably another thing to be a bounty hunter in the days of the New Republic because we've seen what kind of dumb fucks they are. So it would be cool if they wrestled with a lot of that. Like, you know, Mando's trusting the New Republic as the good guys, but what if they have him mm-hmm. running some, you know, what was that? Katie? Was that? No, the Katie O'Brien is who she played. I can't remember who the spy is. The Moff Gideon loyalist spy.
Something. Aliyah?
Aliyah. Yeah. There you go. Aliyah King. What if he ends up doing a mission for her? And like I said, we've already said like a lot of things that could disillusion Mando and Grogu towards the current order, you know, like Leia mm-hmm. could issue a fatwa against potentially the dark Jedi baby Grogu that, you know, they could have him do a whole bunch of like morally gray shit that he thinks tarnishes his honor. And the other mm-hmm. thing is, like, there's multiple ways of being a bounty hunter. Like, there's the way where, like, maybe Boba Fett just goes and disintegrates and doesn't give a shit. So Mando seems like the kind of guy that, number one, will give you, you know, he wants to bring you into justice. He wants to bring you in warm. If you make him, he'll bring you in cold. And also, we've seen him flex a bit. When he gets a mark that he thinks is immoral, he doesn't have to execute it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it is, like, you know, it's a very feudal way. Like, Star Wars is a very feudal universe. It doesn't have to make sense to us. You just have to know that, like, that's just not how it's seen. It's like there's some people to see eating meat today as barbaric. If you go back mm-hmm. a few, like even 100 years ago, that's such a minority opinion; it almost doesn't exist. So, and 100 years from now, maybe everyone feels that way. We got synthetic meat, and it just like, oh my mm-hmm. god, you ate something alive that had thoughts and geez, what the fuck is wrong with you people? But
yeah,
it's the way. Maddie from Philly says, I want them to resist the urge to blow up and destroy Mando's home. This is a video gamey trope that's always used to reboot the plot, and it feels incredibly likely for the start of next season. Yeah.
It's how Star Wars starts, right?
Yeah.
Like, you can't be any more Star Wars than blowing up the kid's home.
If only we had an aunt and uncle that we can have a flaming skeleton at the doorstep. I can see it though, right? Mando's just chilling on his front porch, and the TIE fighter comes by and just blows his shit up, and him and Grogu have to swear vengeance.
Mm-hmm.
You might be disappointed, Maddie. That seems real likely. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.
And I'm smiling as I say it, so I'm not against it. Wait, you want Mando to just be home on the range?
Yeah, he can't. It can't. Like, the show can't survive him kicking his feet up permanently, so...
People come up and, well, hey, I need to go on a mission, Mando. Well, you know, I thought I'd just semi-retire until I got Grogu through college, and I might pick up bounty hunting after that, but, you know, for now, this is the way for me. Don't blow that shit up. Blow that fucking cottage up. Two, the religious cultish villains. Assuming Mando won't be fighting the Empire exclusively, I'd love to see him take on some kind of religious cult group, a kind of inverse or parallel to the Mandalorians. Would be cool to compare and contrast a group like this, and they would feel different than anything else we've seen in live-action Star Wars. Yes.
Yeah. What's the Ithorian culture like? Can we get... Are they religious fanatics? What, do we have some alien race in Star Wars that's like...
They speak out both sides fanatical? Of their mouth, Jim. That's what I know about those fucking Ithorians.
It's culty as hell.
If you don't know, Ithorians literally have two mouths on each side of their face, so...
Those hammerhead looking aliens.
And do you know, as far as the West End role playing game goes, canonically or semi canonically, they with those double mouths can generate a sound, a roar so loud that it literally is like a concussion grenade. They can like flashbang people with their vocal cords. I played an Ithorian Jedi once in a campaign.
Is a
sweet move. Just to do your bull roar.
Uh huh.
Do 1d6 of damage and put everybody flat on their ass within 10 meters or whatever. Obviously I'm totally down to explore those topics. Archaeology. Dun 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 dun. Indiana Mando. Or is it Mando Jones? Mandalorian Jones. This is present in some games and comics, but hasn't been done on the screen. I'd love to see Mando find some place that's significant to the history of Star Wars, be that place place of the Jedi, Mandalorians, or something else entirely. Ooh, it would be cool to go to the jungles of Yavin 4 and explore the old Jedi temples.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Right?
Exactly, yep.
What the fuck are these ruined Jedi temples on Yavin? Mm-hmm. I could see that. And it could be like a mission that like Luke sends Grogu to kind of like complete. Although Luke's not going to take Grogu back. Grogu's got to finish be the Mandalorian before he can maybe take the turn to be the Jedi training.
And I mean, they did this in the books, right? Like I think of the Jedi Academy trilogy.
Right.
That was all about Luke trying to train a young Jedi apprentice on Yavin with, like, all these temples and the influences of the dark forces that live there, that, you know, the balance of the force includes the dark side too. And like that was super interesting stuff to me, as well, at least as a like 14-year-old. So maybe it would still hold up as a 41-year-old.
And a form of that made it into the sequel trilogy. Like the idea that Luke had a Jedi Academy and one of his star pupils fell from the path, even one he was related to. Why did they fucking shove all that shit into Star Wars Legends?
I don't know. Because they wanted to clean slate it.
I guess it makes sense to clean, and then you can just cherry pick the stuff that's really good.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's clearly what they're doing. So maybe that's the good way to go. Matt, he says, thanks for the great coverage this season and keeping it leal. Ooh, there is a lot of negativity online from some groups, and I felt you guys really gave it all a fair shake. I thought the season was great, and I'm glad the Book of Boba Fett didn't derail the show completely. Mm. Looking forward to next season, your podcast in between. Yeah, and he says, please watch Ahsoka. I'm going to watch at least 3 episodes, and I'll give the Andor guarantee. I think it's a truly great show, I will try my damnedest to twist Jim's arm into watching it. you know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, if I hear good things about Ahsoka, I'll probably watch it, just like I did with Andor. I heard great things about Andor, and I was very much against watching Andor because of the recent history of Star Wars. I'm less against it now because of Andor.
Yeah.
Right, right. So, like, yeah, I'm willing to, if I hear good things, watch it. Sure.
Yeah, and that's why I'm watching it right off the bat, because, like, to me, this is the first real test of the Filoni Favre era. Like, this, I should, like, Ahsoka should not be mediocre.
Mm-hmm.
If a firm hand is now on a Star Wars tiller, this show should not at all be mediocre. It should be good, if not great. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's got to be at least as good as Mandalorian, but, like, it's got to honestly be better for me to, like, really do the Jim arm twist move. And I want it to be. I'm not rooting against Star Wars, but I appreciate your discernment that we are not a hater cast, because we want to love Star Wars. It's just, you know, Star Wars has got to be lovable. Yeah. Virgil, what's that?
Oh, I just said, yeah, but that's all I try to do, is give everything a fair shake. I don't want to be predisposed to hate something simply because I don't like it currently. If it impresses me, it impresses me.
I hear that fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate.
Hate leads to watching Harry Potter, apparently, because I got to do that soon. Well, that'll be the real test for me. Can I give that a fair shake?
I'm going to be happy either way. It's just yeah. I want to kiss the commissioner that is making you watch Prisoner of Azkaban, because you can no longer play the, like, oh, I don't fucking know Harry Potter. What the hell is that? That's about a child wizard, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Gotta shut that shit off at the source. Virgilio, the things I'm looking forward to seeing in the future. Regarding the Mandalorian series, I think the adoption scene and the fact that Grogu's parents are gone points to a future search for his parents. Maybe the two encounter a clue to his origins and the course of executing a bounty.
Ooh. All right. So maybe Grogu's the one who gets they don't blow up his home. Grogu just gets a little angsty and little antsy, wants to figure out who his parents are, that kind of thing.
That's something that I feel like an older Grogu would get to. I don't think that, like, even, like, pre-adolescent teenager Grogu wants to start looking for his parents. But maybe you do that as an old when you get older.
Yeah, maybe 30s, early 30s. I could see it.
But I also like the idea of, like, an adopted kid just being like, you know, not having any, like, hey, I got an awesome dad. You know, like, I am not missing a piece of me at all. That's a valid way to roll as well. Let's see. Regarding the Mandalorians in general, I'm thinking the Darksaber is crushed, but the Kyber crystals are still good. Perhaps we'll see the Mandalorians look to ex-Jedi Ahsoka for guidance on how to reconstruct it. Huh.
Hmm.
I don't know anything about it, except for what I've seen on TikTok implies that maybe the Darksaber was seen as cursed by the Jedi. Or...
Oh, they wouldn't help.
It's certainly not like, it doesn't act like, you know, it doesn't act like a regular lightsaber. It's a darksaber for one thing. It's heavy. Shouldn't be heavy.
They're just pissed that everybody's got lightsabers now.
Because
I'm with him.
Yeah, too many lightsabers. Regarding his post-original trilogy, pre-sequel trilogy era, I'm looking forward to better clarification of some of the rush through plot points of Rise of Skywalker. I'm not even talking about the return of Sheev. He actually says Palpatine, but every time someone says Palpatine, I'm gonna say Sheev.
Mm-hmm.
But the return of Sheev, instead of like an explanation of how Lando united all the galaxy's ships in just an hour or so. It'd be great if we could see loose confederations already formed throughout the galaxy because of their fear of the New Republic and the First Order. Yeah, I mean, that actually makes a lot of sense to me. Like, the fact that the rebels would not forget how to form an alliance. Like,
sure.
You know, they just get the band back together again.
Mm-hmm.
Gary, final message, says, I'm listening to your Mandalorian finale pod, and I completely agree that Mando is definitely getting a new ship. I was a little unclear to me when he was working his deal with Captain Carson if he was bringing the Imperial remnants in cold, he's going to straight up assassinate them. Either way, they'll probably need a new ship to transport. I don't know if they'll rebrand a previously established ship like they did at the N1 Starfighter, but either way, the merch must flow. Thanks for your coverage, and I hope you and Jim will be back for Ahsoka. We'll see. My preference is a new ship. I thought the Razor Crest was fucking badass. I missed a Razor Crest.
Yeah, I think the N1 is super badass too. I love the maneuverability, the speed, but it doesn't have the same quality that the Razor Crest had.
Yeah.
But I like them both.
The lamest shit ever is if he comes back in a chromed out YT 1300 freighter or a okay. B-wing. Yeah, it's the Millennium Falcon or a okay. B-wing or
yeah.
You know, like a Corellian Corvette. Like I kind of want to see.
He's like, "Hey, I've been doing some bounties. Can I get my hands on one of those Y-wings?" Yeah, and I want a custom paint job.
Yeah, or Dash Rendar had some kind of Corellian freighter. Like I want to see something I haven't seen before.
All right, I got a way to tie this all together. Every email that we just considered, everything we just said, I can tie it all together. It's not that they blow up their home. Baby Grogu gets antsy, wants to go look for his parents. He does so by going to Luke, who might be able to help him find them. He's on Yavin. He's teaching while there. Grogu gets influenced by a dark Jedi force in a temple, and he finds the Sun Crusher, and that becomes their new ship.
He's gonna the Sun Crusher.
was that
another single man fighter, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah, I don't think you could fit Mando and Grogu in there, but like, I've always loved the Sun Crusher. I think it's a super cool idea. If for people who don't know, it's a ship that is basically invincible, and they call it the Sun Crusher because it goes into the hearts of suns, like literally just drives into them, cannot be destroyed by them.
Yeah.
And then causes the sun to explode. So like,
yeah, hell of a weapon.
Yeah. I mean, they've already kind of done something like that in the Star Wars sequels. You know,
I really like the original Darksaber. Do you remember when that crazy Hutt scraped up enough money? He couldn't build the whole Death Star, but he figured out a way to build just the reactor and the main beam assembly. God. And it was this giant cylinder that when it fired its main beam, it looked like a lightsaber. I think it was called the Dark Saber.
Oh, wow. No, I don't remember that.
That's my favorite super weapon of the old Legends era. That mm-hmm. and the World Devastators. Do you remember the World Devastators?
No.
Those were the self-replicating machines that could start from small to be like the size of giant warehouses. They like would literally like devour a planet to make more of themselves.
Like the things on Westworld that chew up the earth. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they're like mouse droids, only bigger, and they eat your planet. They're rat droids.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah, no, and like I said, we'll see about Ahsoka. I would say that if you want our Ahsoka coverage, it's probably going to be an off-the-clock form, which is our podcast or like that we use to talk about all the stuff we're not talking about on main podcasts. It's a premium podcast. You will have to pay at least $5 a month to hear it. It might be worth it if you want to check out. You can just subscribe for 1 month and cancel, you know, $5. Is it worth $5 to hear us talk about Ahsoka? And then if we like it, that's the thing. It's like our intention with this was to like cover a lot of the Star Wars stuff. And then that and the Marvel stuff kind of consistently disappointed us. So we never really got there. But like, I'd love a world where 6-7 months out of the year, we're doing a Star Wars show.
I mean, we'll definitely be back with Andor if they.
Oh, hell
do
yeah.
They are doing another season of that. So definitely
Wild
be back
Gone
on that.
Darks couldn't pull me away from pulling the ears off Andor. But
okay,
I gotta throw in this stuff. This just prove to the kids that I'm not a fake Star Wars fan.
I mean, why do you think I brought the Sun Crusher? Come on.
Exactly right. Exactly right. It all goes back to the Caravan of Courage is what I think.
Jesus.
So that's gonna do it for our coverage of the Mandalorian. We will be back for the next season of Mandalorian, definitely for more Andor. If we do any Star Wars coverage at all, that's not in a premium podcast, it'll be in this here feed. So you don't have to resubscribe to anything. We'll just morph this from the Tribe of Two. Well, it might just be the Tribe of Two forever, but it'll be the Tribe of Two featuring Andor, Tribe of Two featuring Ahsoka. So you found us in the right spot. If you are a Tribe of Two listener and you wonder what else we get up to, I cordially invite you to follow our Bald Move Pulp feed. That's where we cover all of our science fiction, our fantasy, our zombie, dragon, spaceship, ninja, darksaber shit goes on Bald Move Pulp. That way you don't have to follow our individual feeds. It just comes right to your podcast player. And if you just want to pick and choose, I recommend going to twitter.com/baldmove. That's where we post like all the stuff we're doing weekly and like our, you know, our weekly coverage schedules. You can get a good idea of what we're covering right now. We're covering a weird prestige mystery box show called Yellow Jackets on Showtime. We got a bunch of stuff coming back in June. We're looking forward to season two of Severance doing full coverage for. We're looking forward to Foundation, a great Apple TV science fiction show, returning for its second season based on the old Asimov Foundation and Empire series. So there's lots of good science fiction stuff coming up this year at Bald Move. And then, oh, my next year is going to be crazy. We might get The Last of Us back. Definitely will have The House of the Dragon coming back. Yeah, join, follow us along, twitter.com/baldmove. And if you'd like to get access to the premium content, like Off the Clock, like our likely discussion of Ahsoka, you want to be on the club, go to support.baldmove.com to find out how you can get access to all that premium content and ad-free feeds. All right. Thank you for being with us as we follow the way of The Mandalorian. We appreciate having you along for the ride. Whether we see you next year for Mandalorian or much, much sooner, whenever we see you. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya.